Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. After the end of the Second World War, Greece faced another 3 years of internal conflict. The Greek Civil War led to almost 150,000 deaths and became the first post-war battleground between communism and the West. Chloe Hadjimatheou reports.
It's October the 16th, 1944. And the British Army is marching into Athens to liberate occupied Greece.
Hello, BBC. This is Douglas Willis speaking from Constitution Square in Athens. We've been pelted with rice and confetti and treated like conquering heroes. A big moment is to come when the long columns of English troops, which are getting ready at the port, march through these festooned streets. Because just now, someone has got a loudspeaker working, and it's hammering out everything from Annie Laurie to the Greek national anthem and Roll Out the Barrel.
The Germans had fled because of the advance of the Allied forces, but also because of the resistance movement in Greece, which had put up such an effective fight. Manolis Paturakis was a teenager living on Greece's biggest island, Crete, when the war ended.
My father was the captain of the resistance during the German occupation. All my family, my uncle and also my grandpa, was in the resistance. I was a little boy then, about 12, and I helped the resistance, taking some information from the German barracks to resistance.
Greece's biggest resistance movement was ELAS, which was organised by the Communist Party. And by the time the British forces arrived, it effectively controlled most of the country. Chris Barker was with the Allied troops as they entered Athens.
When we got to Athens, although we hadn't actually seen a German, we were treated as though we were conquering heroes. And as we walked along the streets, we were cheered, we were hugged. People came up and gave us flowers.
But before long, the atmosphere of celebration had soured. Most of the partisans were communists, and Britain feared Soviet contagion in southern Europe. Within 6 weeks of their arrival, the British were engaged in armed combat against ELAS.
Well, I thought we'd come to liberate the Greeks, but within what seemed to be a short space of time, we were actually killing them in a cause that I couldn't quite understand.
The Battle of Athens raged throughout December 1944, and the British Foreign Minister, Anthony Eden, sent in 25,000 troops as reinforcement.
Mr. Eden and Field Marshal Alexander, from the roof of the embassy, watched RAF fighter planes firing cannon and rockets at buildings held by the still-fighting forces of ELAS. Airborne troops occupying a rooftop position fire their machine gun into a street of Athens to prevent the movement of ELAS forces.
In the next few weeks, over 4,000 civilians would die. When the British launched air attacks, ELAS decided to withdraw their troops from the capital. The British persuaded the losing side to disarm. In return, they were promised amnesty and a guarantee that those who had collaborated with the Nazis during the occupation would be arrested and tried. Manolis Paturakis remembers seeing the guns being handed over in Crete.
There was an English officer and the Greek police. And there was a line that you pass and you threw your weapon there. After they left to come to the villages, the police and the ones that collaborated with the Germans went to meet the partisans that came back. And they started to hit them, torture them and to kill them.
The British-backed anti-communist government had broken its promise. All over Greece, ELAS fighters faced mass arrest. Over the next year, thousands of their supporters were jailed and sent to concentration camps on remote Greek islands. The persecution of former resistance fighters and their families left many people feeling they had no choice but to flee to the mountains and take up arms once again. The civil war had begun. Manolis remembers when his own village was attacked.
The day that they burned my house, I escaped. I was not in the house. And we saw the flames of our houses from a hill. My mother took 4 children, my sister and 3 brothers, and went running in the villages to find shelter. Only one family accepted them because they were afraid of their own lives, because they would do hospitality to the captain of the partisans, then wife and children. I felt so bad, but I could not do anything.
Meanwhile, in Athens, preparations were beginning for the first post-war democratic elections. Elas fighters and their supporters decided to boycott the process, even though they had the majority support. They claimed that with their members facing mass persecution, the election couldn't be considered free and fair. Having ruled themselves out of the political process, Elas now had to depend on fighting their way into power. Manolis had left his burnt-out village and joined his father and the other partisans up in the mountains of Crete.
It was a terrible, terrible, terrible time. I was 70 years old then. Very hungry, very thirsty. We slept out on the mountains in some caves, and also we found food from the villagers.
Back in Athens, the British decided they couldn't afford the cost of propping up the Greek government anymore. So they turned to the only country capable of handling the expense and the commitment involved, the United States. They warned the Americans that if they didn't take over immediately, Greece would probably fall to the communists within 2 weeks. Then they waited for a response. It came in the form of the Truman Doctrine.
We shall not realize our objectives, however, unless we are willing to help free peoples to maintain their free institutions and their national integrity against aggressive movements that seek to impose upon them totalitarian regimes.
President Truman's new foreign policy promise to intervene in any country that was threatened by what America perceived to be the scourge of communism would eventually lead to the wars in Korea and Vietnam. But in 1947, the US began sending massive shipments of weapons to the Greek military, and before long they were gaining the upper hand. In the mountains of Crete, Manolis's father, realizing the odds were against them, decided to send his son out of harm's way.
I was with my father. Then the day before they fell in the ambush, she sent me in a village. My father was killed with 13 companions and with my 2 brothers.
The partisans had been receiving some help from their communist neighbours in Bulgaria, Yugoslavia and Albania. But what they were waiting for was for the Russians to get involved. They never did. The partisans were on their own. Manolis was caught and sent to prison on the island of Makronisos. Thousands were held there during the civil war.
Makronisos was the worst. For instance, they did not give you water. And also there was hunger, and then many will kill it. Kill it by bullets. They start to torture us. They tied you in a place and they hit you under your feet. And you know, in Makronisos, many committed suicide, many of them. They could not resist to the tortures.
The definitive moment in the war came in 1949, when Greek government forces, operating under American direction, launched an all-out aerial campaign against the partisans who had taken refuge in the Gramos Mountains in the north of the country. As well as conventional bombs, their planes were carrying a terrible new weapon, napalm.
That's the first time that they used napalm was against the Greek partisans. They tried this kind of weapon there in the mountains, Gramos.
The partisans had lost. Almost 100,000 Elas fighters and communist sympathisers were imprisoned, exiled or executed. Manolis was released from Makronisos prison, a damaged man, unable to speak or walk properly. It took him years to fully recover. Greece continued to be ruled by right-wing governments for the next 25 years. Today, the civil war remains an uncomfortable subject in Greece.
Chloe Hadjimatheou. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.